March 21st hearing of the House Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules. Happy spring, members. And we will begin by opening a public hearing on House Joint Resolution 43. And Mr. Stembridge, please tell us about this piece of legislation.
Chair Rosenbaum and members, this is HJR 43. Upon approval at the November 2008 general election, amends the Oregon Constitution to authorize voter registration up to and including election day.
Okay, thank you very much for that explanation. And I see in the audience, we have both the Secretary of State and Representative Ben Cannon. Would you like to come up together?
Sure.
Okay. Good morning to both of you, and welcome back to the Elections Committee.
Thank you. Would you like to begin, Secretary?
Oh, I can, or you can begin, whichever you...
Whatever. Go ahead.
If you have another committee to go to...
I do not.
All right. Well, then I'll go ahead.
Light guys.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's a real pleasure to be here. For the record, Bill Bradbury, Oregon Secretary of State. And I'm here to be a strong supporter of this resolution to amend the Constitution to return us to same-day voter registration like we used to have until we had an ugly incident with the Rajneesh in Central Oregon. So I have to tell you, as Chief Elections Officer for the state of Oregon, I'm really dismayed that we don't have the highest voter turnout in the country. And the only states that beat us in voter turnout are those that have same-day registration. Other than that, we're right up there, real close to them, and there's no question if we have same-day registration, we will be at the top of the chart in terms of voter participation. With our centralized voter registration system, or OCVR, we now have a secure voting system that makes it possible to ensure that no voter is registered in more than one place. That's really a change that has taken place in the we've implemented this last election cycle. So that problem of people being registered in more than one place has been removed. Now, our office has worked very closely with the clerks, because we view the clerks very, very much as the county clerks, the election officers, as really our key partners. And I have talked to them a number of times about my support for same-day registration. They have told me that they have real concerns about same-day registration, and I assume you'll hear from them at some point today. But I really want to emphasize that the clerks and our office really see ourselves as partners in this process. This is the one place where we have some disagreement. But I really believe that same-day registration can work, and the reason I say that is based on our current experience. The fact is that you can now update your voter registration until 7:59 p.m. on election day. The only people who aren't covered by that kind of updating of registration are people who weren't registered yet. And that's all we're talking about adding with this measure, is adding to the pool of people who, you have a lot of people who update their registration on up to 7:59 p.m. on election day, and we handle that very effectively. And the only thing you're adding to that is new registrants, allowing people the right to vote. The key, in my view and in my tenure, is to increase voter participation. Same-day registration has proven that it does, in fact, do that, because the other states have higher turnout. Instituting in Oregon will be the final step we need to have the most engaged voters in the country. So I urge this committee to support this resolution.
Any questions for the Secretary of State? Vice Chair Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Secretary Beverly, thank you. When you talk about people updating the registration till 7:59, a day of election, in this resolution, we're talking about the later, if registered not later than the day of the election, in the manner provided by law. The manner provided by law, would that set a time on the day of election where the citizen would have to have their, would they be able to put it in at 7:59? Would they have to have it by 5 p.m.? How would this work logistically?
That's all to be really worked out and worked out in partnership with the clerks. I think the key thing to know is that because we now have a centralized voter registration system, and because we currently update registrations right until the deadline, it can work to do registration at the same time that you're updating registrations, and we have the technology now to really handle it very, very effectively.
Thank you.
And Mr. Secretary of State, would people be casting a provisional ballot then if they were registering on the day of the election?
That's I'm actually not sure how we would handle that. I would defer to Brenda, our elections person on that. But that is a possibility. I know that is a discussion. Would people who are registering need to cast a provisional ballot? Mm-hmm. And that might be the case. I don't know.
Because right now we do have some cases where people are casting provisional ballots for other reasons, right?
Right.
Yeah, so we know how to handle that.
Right.
Okay, and other questions? Representative Esquivel?
Yes, Mr. Secretary, what changed this? We used to have same-day registration. What changed this?
What changed this
and
was,
why?
I think we all remember it. It was an incredible effort by the Rajneesh in Central Oregon to basically try to move a fairly sizable number of homeless people to Central Oregon and have them register to vote to take over Antelope. That certainly was a huge problem, and I understand why people reacted as strongly as they did to it. I think I was offended by it as well. I would hate to have one incident at one time basically deny thousands of people the right to participate in our elections. I would hate for the effect of having had one incident like that be that we basically reduce the participation in elections in Oregon.
Follow-up. Yes, Mr. Secretary, thank you for putting that on the record, and that's what I wanted to do. The other thing that comes to my mind, could this open the door for abuse?
No, it does not. I don't believe it opens the door for abuse. I believe that Oregon had a same-day registration system until we had a problem with the Rajneesh, and I think we all recognize that was a fairly exceptional, unusual kind of event. I think it's a real tragedy to basically end up having your whole system designed based on a real aberration, which is the Rajneesh. And that's what I think we need to turn around with this constitutional amendment.
And from your testimony, it sounds like other states are doing this and successfully doing it.
Oh, there are a number of states. There are how many states? There are, seven states that have same-day registration. It works on a regular, it's used very effectively, and we now have a centralized voter registration system and can make it work here.
Great. Thank you. Vice Chair Buckley?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going to make the point, because we have the centralized database, in that scenario, a group of people could be gathered from one area now, transported someplace else. They could re-register up to 7:59 on election day. If they really want to abuse the system, they could abuse that system currently. And just to make notice, my colleague just nudged me here, this would have to be approved by the people. We're saying it.
Right. Right. The key point would be that the homeless people that are shipped from Portland would need to be registered in Portland.
Right.
And they could then re-register in Antelope now up until Election Day.
Right.
And cast a ballot.
Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess it's a kind of a two-part question. My concern is younger voters, because I see them as having been a high school principal not voting in numbers. And I guess I'd ask you if there was one thing we could do that you think would cause greater participation of those young people, what would it be? And is this part of it? And the other part of that one is that kids turn 18 on election day. And I know there's provisions to get registered and do some stuff ahead of time, but a lot of times that's when they think, oh, I could vote today. And there's right now they can't vote, or 2 days before. They really cannot vote. And I guess I'd like to address both of those issues from my perspective.
Well, I think it's very clear, and I'm sure we'll have testimony from younger citizens.
Okay.
It's very clear that younger people become much more interested in elections as the elections approach and as the intensity of media increases and as people in their family talk to them and the like. They become much more interested in elections. And so it's very clear that you get a significant increase in turnout, particularly, not just among younger voters, but particularly among younger voters. If you have same-day registration. And I don't have any doubt about that. Now, what was the second question?
The other part was that person that doesn't turn 18 until just before the election. And I think we do have procedures that would allow them to register earlier, but so often they don't think about it until their birthday.
As long as they're 18 on election day, they can register early. But the question is, do they?
Yeah, right.
I know that some schools do provide voter registrations to get them. You can send it in, I'm pretty sure, a couple months, 60 days before your birthday and get registered. But it's very clear that it would be. There are a lot of younger people who would like to participate who only really get excited as you get very close to the election.
Thank you.
Great. Other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Madam
and Representative
Cannon,
good morning.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Ben Cannon, representing House District 46 in parts of Southeast and Northeast Portland. Thank you, Chair, for hearing the bill and for your sponsorship of it. I planned to come here with a litany of facts and figures relating especially to youth participation in elections. I'll only tease you with this one because I think there will be others in the audience who will speak to this. But states, the seven states that have same-day registration, have seen a 14-point increase in the percentage of youth turnout. I think in that study it was 18 to 24-year-olds in presidential elections. So there has been a corresponding uptick in the percentage of youth who vote. I chose not to go into that because I spent last night at my school. I teach 6th, 7th, and 8th graders, and I was at a performance of theirs, and although the subject was African art and dance and storytelling, I thought very much about the fact that I'll be going back to teach them in the fall, and I'll be teaching them a sort of constitutional history and civics and citizenship course, and I'll be talking a lot about voting. And I'll be talking about the importance of voting, and not who you vote for or how you vote, but the fact of voting. I'll be talking about the Declaration of Independence and the fact that it states that rulers derive their powers, just powers, from the consent of the governed. I'll be reminding them of their 70-year-old teacher, a mentor of mine, who immigrated from Ireland as a young woman to this country because she was so inspired by its ideals of freedom and self-determination that helped inspire the freedom seekers in her own home country. I'll be reminding them of the fact that voting is the way that we, as a diverse and often passionately disagreeable citizenry, resolve our issues peacefully. At this point, they'd be getting pretty tired of me, but I'll go on. I'll be reminding them of the history of voting rights in Oregon, the fact that women were granted the right to vote in 1912, American Indians in 1924, African Americans not until 1927, despite the 15th Amendment, 18-year-olds in 1971 with the 26th Amendment federally, and that in vote by mail and with ballot measure 60 in 1998, we increased access and participation to this most critical component of our democracy. I'll remind them that there have also been setbacks in the right to vote, that in 1924 Oregon voters adopted a literacy test that effectively prohibited many people from voting. I'll remind them of my sadness that in presidential elections in this country, fewer than half of eligible adults choose to vote, and my fears about what that means for a country where fewer and fewer people over time have chosen to exercise their rights despite the laws expanding participation. And I hope that all this will stick in their minds and that when they turn 18, they'll rush out and register. But as I look at those classes, those 60 students, 6th, 7th, and 8th graders who I teach, I know there are a few who will forget a little between the age of 13 and 18, who won't be rushing out to register when they're 60 days before 18 or on their 18th birthday. And I suspect that for those few kids who don't, and I hope it is just a few, there may be one or two who, when that election rolls around, in that final week or two before election day, will think, you know, I had that teacher who told me about the importance of voting, and my obligation as a citizen to do this, engage in this. And if they live in the state of Oregon, and if we don't pass HJR 43 and don't refer this to the voters, and the voters don't pass it, they will not, in that moment a week before the election, they will not have the opportunity to go out and register, vote, experience that taste of democratic participation. I encourage the committee to help water the seed of citizenship that teachers across the state are planting in Oregon's students right now by passing HJR 43 onto the full House, and I encourage our body to refer it to voters. Earl Warren, Supreme Court Justice, wrote in 1964 that the right to vote freely for the candidate of one's choice is the essence of a democratic society, and any restrictions on that right strike at the heart of representative government. And you will hear today in speakers who follow me, I believe, the degree to which same-day registration, election day registration, really does help clear a significant hurdle towards expanding participation in voting, and particularly among young people. Thank you very much for your time, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Any questions for Representative Cannon? Vice Chair Buckley.
I was going to make a comment, Representative Cannon. I thought you were going to say that the young student would remember that teacher from so many years back and rush out and vote against him. But your point is very well taken. I can imagine being 17 years old in July, and the last thing on my mind, I'm sure, would be registering to vote for November. I think that's it. I think it's an excellent point you make, and thank you for coming forward.
Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. You mentioned some studies, I guess, elsewhere, that there's an uptick in youth turnout when they have same-day registration. Since we have had same-day registration here in Oregon, I'm just wondering if there's studies comparing then and now, or then before we changed it to what it is now.
That's a very good question. Madam Chair, Representative Thatcher, that's a very good question. I have not seen that study. It would be an interesting one to look at.
If I can comment, Madam Chair, I think there would be a difference because vote by mail did come in too, so I don't know if we'd get an accurate view of that participation.
Other questions? Okay, thank you both very much for your testimony. We have quite a list of people signed up to testify on this. None of them appears to be from farther than 100 miles, so we'll just take them in order. And that will begin with Alex Aronson. I think we'll call people up in groups of three. Alex Aronson, Brett Rowlett, and Jenny Simonis. Please come forward.
Is there somebody else? You know, why don't you three just hold on for a minute, and we do have another witness we're going to take ahead of you, and then we'll call you.
That will be Annette Newingham for the county clerks. Annette? Yes.
I can move in here.
For the record, my name is Annette Newingham. I am Lane County's election official, and I'm here on behalf of the Association of County Clerks. And as Secretary Bradbury said, that the clerks have not been in support of this change. In fact, I testified 2 years ago when this same type of change was suggested. I'd like on the testimony, I'd like to kind of review current law. Current law, which is ORS 247-303, it provides that registered voters, currently active or inactive, may update the registration at any time before 8 p.m. on the day of election, whether they've moved within or between counties. And this was a change made in 1999 to provide Oregonians the opportunity to update their registration and still qualify to vote the correct ballot through Election Day. The reason that change was enacted in 1999 and not extended to same-day registration was the history of what happened in Wasco County, in Antelope, Wasco County. The county clerk, Karen LeBreton Coates, summarized that history of that situation in the following. I know you talked about it earlier, so basically it was that the leaders of the Rajneesh commune in Antelope and Rajneesh Puram were determined to take over the government of Wasco County. In late October, they bussed in homeless people from Portland, California, and as far away as New York, actually offering them a place to live in return for registering and voting in the November general election. It's a very small county, and this county of approximately 13,000 registered voters were overwhelmed with thousands of voters coming in to register on Election Day. The county clerk and the Secretary of State opted to hold hearings into the validity of those registrations, and then the registrants who attended the hearings were allowed to vote. Most of them, they were not, because they didn't attend, and they were they ended up moving to other places. So it ended up working out all right, but it wasn't without a lot of long lines and a major impact to that election office. More recently, Montana has been considering actual rollback of their same-day registration after experiencing a huge last-minute turnout at their 2006 general election. Lines stretched out the door at some polling places, forcing election officials to keep the polls open longer than scheduled. In Oregon, those lines would all be funneled to 36 county clerk's offices because we don't have poll elections. This is at the same time that we're receiving, processing, and counting ballots. Additionally, whatever deadline is in place for new registration, and that's just new people that come to the state, whether it's the 21st day before the election or it's Election Day, what happens is that's when people turn in their registration cards. Our registration deadline is always the big move. Majority of them are updates. They're not new registrations, but we get thousands of them throughout the state. And I'd like to kind of point out that a couple of times the Secretary of State's office has done a midnight madness where they actually kept a couple of places throughout the state open till midnight and collected thousands of cards. It's a great thing for the young people. They do enjoy it. There's no doubt about it. I come from a university town. I understand that. But what did happen is that we received hundreds, if not thousands, of cards up to a week after that deadline, which was after the 21st day. We were still processing voter registration cards past the last day to mail ballots, which was the 14th day before the election. We had over a week. We had probably 2 weeks of registration that we had to process because we have a lot of ID requirements because of the Help America Vote Act. We have to validate that they have the proper ID to know what they get to vote on, and it's very time-consuming. It's not that we don't mind the work. The work is fine. It's just that we also want to make sure that we process registration to people who are validly registered and that we're allowing them the right things to vote on. Oregon has a strong reputation for actively engaging citizens and participating in elections while still maintaining the accuracy of its voter registration rolls. This is often a delicate balancing act of having the laws and processes in place that provide opportunity for registration and still adequate time for election officials to ensure the validity of both those registrations and the accurate conduct of the election. Question earlier was about provisional ballots. If people came in on registration date, we do not have the time to mail out a precinct memorandum card, which is the confirmation that they live at the address that they're at, because if it comes back undeliverable, then we know that's an indication that they do not reside there. We would have to issue each one that was on election day as a provisional ballot, which would mean we'd have to do the investigation after the election and the weeks leading after prior to certification of the election. I just want to speak in behalf of the Association of County Clerks that we really do strongly support voter registration and encourage both young and old to participate in our process. We do want to continue the reputation of maintaining accurate voter registration rolls and the conduct of flawless elections. Our association urges the committee's support in retaining the current registration deadline. And I thank the chair and committee. And if you have any questions, I'm glad
to
ask.
Thank you for your testimony. I think we're going to hold questions because we do have Senator Deckard here to testify. If you could just
hang up.
Stay with us, and then we'll call you back up.
Thank you.
Senator Deckard, good to see you. Welcome to the Elections Committee. Good morning.
Good morning. It's good to be this. I think this is my first House committee to testify before this session.
We're honored.
I'm honored. Madam Chair, Ryan Deckard, State Senator from Washington County. I will not prattle on because I think you've probably heard the rationale for this other than introduce this, and it's nice to see it's an SJR this session. We are an HJR. We got it through the Senate last time. I think it's a very good idea and in a very simple way. One of the most seminal acts in all of our lives is that first time we go to the ballot, and I will never forget in 1992 my first opportunity to really participate in American democracy, and that opportunity, and I was a college student, and watching young people who had just arrived on campus, because we have a late date start for our campuses, register and try to avail themselves of democracy, and what a life-changing experience that is. And then to see that Oregon in particular has one of the toughest systems for those same voters to access because of the vote-by-mail nature of our system and the long deadline that we have is the very idea that I think our system locks out not just those students, but I think they are more in particular adversely affected because they've just arrived on campus and soon are cut out because of the early registration deadline. So that was the rationale. In my testimony, you'll see a lot of statistics of other states that have same day, the incredible benefits that it's provided to those states, and it is just the essence of democracy of why would we lock out a voter, a citizen, that wants to participate in our democracy. I have thought long and hard of any rationale that we would have, and the only one that comes to mind is we just don't want any fraud. We just don't want folks to participate in any fraudulent. We want to allow every citizen, and I think the protections that are in this bill are about as strong as you could get, because you would have to have a highly, highly motivated citizen that would go down to their county clerk and present themselves at the risk of felony, sign their name for their one vote out of the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of votes that are going to be cast. They would, at that point, sign their name and attest, as we all have, that they are a citizen of the state and that they would like to participate along with the rest of us. So to me, this is a day that has come to pass this bill, join the other states that allow same-day registration, and really send a strong message. Obviously, this is one that voters would have to help us send, a strong message to all of our citizens that we want them with us participating, and I think it's a life-changing experience for anyone that first participates, because I think once you have voted and you get that pattern going, you become a party and a citizen and start participating more in the life of your democracy. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for your leadership on this issue. And are there any questions for Senator Deckard? Okay, well, thank you very much for being here. How about questions for our previous witness? Yes.
Could she come
forward? Sure.
Appreciate it, Madam Chair. I'm interested in what the procedures are for a provisional vote and what that involves from where you sit.
Madam
and
Chair.
I just want to clarify that was Vice Chair Berger.
Thank you.
For our tape.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair. Representative Berger. Yes, the provisional ballot process is that when the voter comes to the counter, would register to vote, and we don't have time to validate their registration at that time, what we do is that we have to determine what ballot style they have to have, which would be somewhere like in Lane County, we have like maybe about 100 different styles based on their address. We validate that. We provide them the ballot in a special envelope, and basically what it is to defer that. We would not count it on Election Day, and afterwards we would have to validate the registration prior to counting the ballot.
Follow up.
The validation process, what exactly is it?
The validation process would be we would have to mail something to that address to be the place of a confirmation notice, a precinct memorandum card is what we used to call it, with a voter notification card, and provided it doesn't come back as undeliverable or saying that the person's not there, we then assume that they are there, which is what we do currently. Also, if there was any questions on the address, because oftentimes when we get last-minute registrations, we would also be validating on the system that they weren't registered someplace else. We would be, if as long as they're registered in the state, we would just update that registration and pull it from the other county, make sure that they hadn't voted in the other county.
Yeah, follow up.
What about proof of citizenship?
Madam Chair, Representative Berger, citizenship, they do sign an oath on the actual registration card. If they are a new registered voter, they actually have to provide identification. They have to provide their Social Security, their driver's license, which we match when we update on the new statewide voter registration system, which would show that they are actually have a card. If they don't have one, then they provide a Social Security number. If they do not provide either one, we have to send them notification. We actually have to send two notifications to them. If they don't have either one, then we would have to duplicate the ballot and count everything but the federal races.
Okay. Thank you. So, in other words, there is a process that exists right now for casting provisional ballots.
Absolutely. It is a federal requirement and has been for a very long time, actually.
Thank you. Other questions? Yes, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. Yeah, well, last session we went kind of round and round about the verification of voters, because a lot of people get signed up to vote at fairs and whatever, and stacks of cards would be mailed in, and at that time, we were not requiring somebody writes down their last four digits of their Social Security number, nor provide anything. Nothing. Really. And so you're saying now there is actually checks and balances here in the process, because I have concern that if we weren't doing it before, how is same-day registration going to be more secure? You know? And I would just like to hear.
Madam Chair, Representative Thatcher, the Help America Vote Act made some requirements for federal identification, and as of the beginning of last year, we were required to actually have a system that matched against our Department of Motor Vehicle. That took some time. We had first the statewide voter registration system, and then now it actually, when we enter in the system and we have the driver's license, it matches against that. If they don't have a driver's license, and indeed they cannot have one, they can't just provide as an alternate the last four numbers of their Social Security number, but that would be the second option if they don't have an Oregon driver's license. And we match against that through the Social Security office on our statewide system. So we've made some advances, yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. Yes, Vice Chair Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your testimony. I wanted to ask some questions about the Wasco County incident was 22 years ago, and you might not have this information, but we did have same-day voter registration prior to that incident?
Madam Chair, Representative Buckley, we actually, it was 1999 that we, I don't know when it was actually changed, if 1999 is when we actually went to the 21st day before. Brenda, I think, is that this right year? Right. So in 1999 is when we actually went to the 21st day before as a result of the Wasco County situation. I'm not sure if I have that date right, because I know that we had the same being able to update your registration. That's 1999. I don't know what year we actually changed. I was not here during the Wasco County situation. But I do know that all Oregon counties, when they're on election day and you're registering, a lot of people will come in, and we oftentimes... last presidential election had the whole front office just full of people registering to vote at the last minute. Updates is, you know, we already do that all the way through 8 p.m., so a lot of people do already wait for that process. When you can see them on the statewide voter registration system that they came from Multnomah County, it is well managed. The problem is that when is a new registrant from to Oregon, you don't have the information from the other state. You don't know if they voted in the other state. You do not know what their current situation was, because you don't have any history from that other state. So that is difficult for us to be able to validate that they're not registering in more than one location, because we don't have the time to do that research.
But I assume, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to follow. I mentioned in the Wasco situation, because I was just thinking if I could get a small army of liberals from Berkeley to take over Representative Esquivel's district, I'd be interested in.
I'd still win.
Okay, a large army. I just want to verify, though, even if someone comes from another state and does fill out registration form, it is a felony. It's a federal felony, correct, if they lie on that.
We would certainly, if it was determined that somebody had lied to us, we would refer them to the Secretary of State's office, and Brenda and her office and staff would do what they needed to do to prosecute if there was the intent to defraud, yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you very much.
And now we'll go back again and call Alex Aronson, Brett Rowlett, and Jenny Simonis. Would the three of you please come forward? Good morning. Welcome to the Elections Committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thanks for having us.
Please go ahead.
My name is Alex Aronson. I was the lead organizer for Building Votes. Building Votes was a nonpartisan voter registration campaign that in 2006 registered over 20,000 voters. We registered over 16,000 young voters under the age of 30 and increased the size of the Oregon under 30 electorate by over 6%. I personally registered about 2,000 voters over that, which, as far as we know, is more than anybody else in the state, maybe in the country. So I had a lot of experience talking to people on the streets about voting and about not voting. I've heard basically every reason there is for a young person not to want to vote. A handful of them have reservations about democracy, about the government and its concerns for their needs. But the majority of young people that aren't voting because they don't feel informed about democracy. They don't know the candidates, they don't know the issues, and they don't feel like they have the time to make informed votes, so they simply abstain. The other thing to keep in mind is that these people are young. As I mentioned before, Representative Roblin, voting is not an ingrained habit for an 18-year-old. It's natural for us at 9 o'clock in a committee room to think about voting as an easy thing for us to do, but if you put yourself in the shoes of an 18-year-old high school student, this isn't necessarily something that is a part of their life. As far as I see it, we need to be opening the doors for their participation. The crux of the issue has also been mentioned. The vast majority of voter education takes place in the weeks before the election. This is when media campaigns begin to ramp up. This is when campaigns begin to do the bulk of their outreach to voters. And this is when people, not just young people, this is when people begin to pay attention to the elections. This is when we get our information. And this is the same exact time when we're no longer allowed to register. So just as young people are beginning to get interested, we shut the door. And to me, that just doesn't seem to make any sense. Same-day registration is not going to cure youth voter apathy. This is obviously not a cure-all for a very deep-seated problem that people like Representative Cannon are trying hard in the classrooms to overcome. But when we're trying to engage a new generation of people to give us a healthy democracy, to show them that they're no longer welcome right as they're getting interested is the wrong message to send. So I urge you to please support House Joint Resolution 43 and let us register on the day of the election. Thanks.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Yes, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. You were mentioning that young people don't vote because many of them feel like they don't have time to make informed votes. How would registering the same day give them time to make an informed vote?
As I mentioned, in the months before the election, there's very little being discussed in the public sphere about the elections. And in the weeks leading up to the elections, this is when the media really starts to tackle the tough issues that are on the voters' plate. So in the weeks before the election, people in general and young people really begin to feel more comfortable with the issues surrounding the election and feel more educated and feel more comfortable voting.
Follow up? Yes, follow up.
And we have registration right now 20 days before, so I guess that is within weeks before the election, so I'm not sure how... Why this is
the huge majority of voter outreach takes place in the 3 weeks before the election. Three weeks. That's 21 days.
Okay. Thank you. Go ahead. Whoever.
Okay. I'm Jenny Simonis, and I'm here from Gresham, Oregon, and I'm also here in support of the House Joint Resolution. As you may tell, I am young, but I'm actually coming at this from a different point of view. In 2004, I actually worked as a temporary elections worker in Multnomah County, starting in October and then through middle November. And so I have a very good perspective on what happens in big elections like this, where people come in, and in the, like you said, in those final weeks, they've become more informed and they want to vote. And oftentimes people don't realize that they're not even registered and that they can't get a ballot until suddenly the ballot doesn't come. And then they call up the elections office and say, well, why didn't I get a ballot? Well, by the time the ballots come out, it's too late. The voter registration deadline has passed. And oftentimes they find out that they haven't voted within a few election cycles and so therefore have dropped off. And most people have no idea that that happens. They registered at the DMV, and the DMV never turned in the voter registrations. That was extremely prevalent in 2004. You turned it into a voter registration drive, and for one of many reasons, it never made it into the elections office. Those can include a lot of them stick with that five business days that it has to be turned in, and if something happens and they don't get it turned in, they just don't. There's something missing from it, and so rather than give it to the elections office and let them handle getting it corrected, they don't turn it in, or just plain fraud, as has been suspected with some of the missing voter registrations. Some people mail it in, and as we all know, mail is not 100%, and it doesn't get in. Or I can't tell you how many of them I handled in 2004 that had become mangled in the mail, because, you know, you just fold it up and glue it and mail it in, and they would get stuck, and you'd get them, and half the corners all torn off, and you don't have enough of the address or the name and or phone number or anything to be able to contact the people. And so oftentimes these are people that honestly believe they have registered to vote. They've done what they thought that they needed to do, and then it comes time to vote, and guess what? It's too late. You can't vote. And just personally, I turned away hundreds of people at Multnomah County elections in the days before the election saying, I'm sorry, there's absolutely nothing I can do for you. You cannot vote. And there's just nothing worse in the world than having to tell somebody who is legally entitled to a vote that they can't vote because of something that was out of their control. And allowing people to register up until election day would solve this, because when people don't get that ballot and they call up the elections office and they say, well, we got your voter registration card and something was missing, or, oh yeah, yours was that mangled one that we couldn't figure out what it was, or oftentimes we couldn't read enough of the information and so yours didn't go in, they can have that time to come in, get the registration in, get that provisional ballot, and be able to vote and participate in democracy like they should be able to. As has been said before, there's plenty of provisions for verifying that these people are entitled to a vote. I mean, the fact is somebody right now could get an absentee ballot in another state, vote there, move to Oregon, and already have registered here, get a ballot and vote here. I mean, there's still the possibility of that double vote between states now. And so using that as a reason to not do this, because there's this potential it could happen that somebody would risk a felony to do that, is present in our current system. And so I just don't see that those minuscule chances where somebody would risk a felony to deny the rights of thousands of people across the state the right to vote. And I urge your support of this bill or this resolution.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Okay, please go ahead.
Good morning, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brett Rillette. I'm legislative director with the Oregon Student Association. OSA represents over 100,000 students at Oregon's universities, community colleges, and OHSU. And today I'm here to ask you to strongly support HJR 43 and help bring Election Day registration to Oregon. College students and young voters would be among the largest groups to benefit from Election Day registration. These residents of our states move more frequently and have a more difficult time at keeping their voter registration current. Often, the voter registration deadline falls 2 weeks after the start of fall classes in Oregon. During the first 2 weeks, college students are faced with numerous tasks, including registering for classes, buying their textbooks, finishing moving into their new place. The list goes on and on, but oftentimes registering to vote falls lower on the list because they have to worry about getting their classes going first, and by the time they realize they've forgotten to vote, the deadline's come and gone, and it's too late. So we have a system in place that kind of disenfranchises a large amount of youth in our state. Election Day registration is proven to greatly increase turnout among youth in the states that have it. Research has shown that 18 to 24-year-olds turn out in rates on average of 14% higher in presidential elections in states with Election Day voter registration and 4% higher during midterm elections. In 2004, four of the five states that had the highest voter turnout in the country for youth were states with Election Day registration. They averaged from 58 to 69% compared to 49% in Oregon. Election Day registration also encourages younger voters to participate in the system. On average, states with Election Day registration, the likelihood that a political party and candidates will contact young voters is 11% higher during presidential elections and 18% higher in midterms elections than states that do not have it. And so, you know, this is important because studies have proven that one of the main reasons why youth turn out to vote and get active in our political system is because of contact they have with candidates and folks that are working on campaigns. And so you are including those youth as well as the rest of the population. Everyone is a factor in elections up until Election Day. Right now we have a system in place that 21 days before an election, if you're not registered, you're not important. The voters don't talk to you. You're not a factor. And so by switching to Election Day registration, every citizen of Oregon that's eligible to vote is a factor in that election up until Election Day. It may make the jobs a little more difficult for the candidates running, but it truly gets us to as great of a democratic system as possible in our state. On a personal note, I grew up in Wisconsin, a state with vote by mail. My first election that I cast a ballot in was because of Election Day registration. I then went to school at the University of Minnesota, another state with Election Day registration. I think I said vote by mail earlier, but Election Day registration. And one of the greatest things I've ever seen was on Election Day of 1998. It was a close election in Minnesota. College students were important. Because of Election Day registration, candidates campaigned to college students up until Election Day. And there was nothing more exciting than to see students standing in line 3 to 4 blocks long at polling places around our campus, waiting to register for the first time and participate in democracy. And so, you know, I do believe that Election Day registration is a win for all Oregonians. It will greatly, greatly encourage youth turnout, and I urge you to support it. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Okay. Thank you all for your testimony. And Brenda, if you wouldn't mind, we actually had a question for you. So if you could come forward and please identify yourself for the record, and I'll turn it over to Vice Chair Barber.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brenda Bays. I'm the Deputy Director for the State Elections Division.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming forward. The previous testifier, Annette, said that the process for attempts to fraud was in your office, and my question was, what is that process, and how often do you go to prosecution, or what happens when there's suspicion of fraud? Does it come from the county clerks, and then what do you do?
Chair Rosenbaum, Representative Berger, what occurs is our office will receive a complaint either from the county elections office or from a citizen showing us that there is possible fraud on a voter registration card. We would, it's a criminal violation, so we would refer it to the Attorney General's office and they would conduct the investigation.
How frequently does that occur in an election cycle? Do you get 100? Do you get 5? Do you get 5,000? Give us a scale here.
Chair Rosenbaum, Representative Berger, it's a small scale. I would say that we typically have anywhere from 1 to 5 in each election cycle. As far as them going to being an actual violation, I would have to check our records, but it's very infrequent that we have an actual criminal violation, but they have occurred in the past. I could get you that number, however.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Another question. Go ahead, Representative Thatcher.
I'm trying to get my mind. When do we actually get the ballots for vote by mail? I can't remember. Is that 2 weeks ahead of time, or is it 3 weeks?
Chair Rosenbaum, Representative Thatcher, the ballots go out between the 18th and 14th day before the election.
14th day. Okay.
So military ballots go out 45 days, however.
Oh, okay. So we're registration is 20, is basically only 3 days ahead of when people can start voting. Okay, that's what I was trying to figure out.
Other questions? Okay, thank you very much. We have a witness who will need to leave, so I think we'll call her out of order, Janice Thompson, and then we'll go back to our list. Good morning.
I'd be happy to come back, if that would work.
Oh, no, that's okay.
Thank you. Janice Thompson with the Money and Politics Research Action Project, a nonprofit group interested in participation in politics and transparency and all that kind of good stuff. I think you're going to hear a lot more along the lines of the supportive comments you've heard earlier. We are in support of HR 43. I want to highlight one argument and address at least some of the questions that have come up thus far. I think another reason to kind of be very intrigued by this in terms of increasing participation and just general involvement is the way in which candidates will now have to talk to everybody, and that will increase the quality of campaigning and just broaden the discussions out there. In terms of some of the questions and whatnot that have come up, there's no extenuating, I think, or additional registration requirements needed. The issues of provisional ballots have come up. I did have a chance, related to some other research, to have some pretty extensive conversations with the Multnomah County elections folks, and all those details, as Secretary Bradbury indicated, would need to get worked out with the clerks, but they're off the cuff. Thought was that the need for professional ballots, wouldn't be a factor. They did mention that already, given the fact that folks can come in and do the registration updates on the day of election, they have some level of lines. They thought the level of lines would increase. So I think that in terms of the discussion and concerns that came up in Montana, that there needs to be a recognition that there could be, I think, a small fiscal impact. But I think it would need to be small. It's really about being prepared. I mean, the Multnomah County folks didn't seem to, raised it. I also, in terms of the Montana experience, I have been tracking that, and in the University of Montana newspaper, and there was a quote from a student. In response to the introduction of the bill to kind of roll this back, and it's one of those student, let's just cut to the chase comments, so I'm quote, "I think that's utter BS," was the end quote, in terms of the concerns raised about, and that it was really just a matter of being prepared. And there's really no evidence of problems in other states with EDR. For example, Minnesota Secretary of State, you know, they've had, you know, the very rare occurrence, and his line was, "We always catch them." So there's other information along those lines, but in general, I would also just want to end, and I can provide the citation for this, but all this discussion about fraud is the underlying analysis is that it is extremely rare. This most recent report, the federal level, 8 people a year, since 2002, nationally, were found any kinds of problems. So I think those are issues that should not be of concern in moving forward on support of HR 43.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Okay. Thank you very much. And next we'll call Marika Zimmerle, Greg Wasson, and Norman Terrell.
Madam Chair, I wouldn't be able to add anything, so I will just defer.
Okay, thank you very much for being here. So we'll also call Jefferson Smith. Good morning.
Okay. Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Marika Zimmerle. I'm here to urge you to support HJR 43. During the last election season, I volunteered registering people to vote. I went out in the summer sun and sometimes in the pouring rain to bring young people into the political fold. The arbitrary deadline of registering 21 days before the election prevented many people from being able to vote. Young people are busy. They have school, work, and a social life to juggle. I have friends who just didn't have the time or resources to register. They were interested in politics and had desired outcomes from the elections. They just couldn't find the time. Many people who I approached on the street did not want to register because they felt they didn't know enough about the upcoming election. If we had same-day registration, these people would be able to educate themselves before they registered. I myself would have had a hard time getting around to fully educating myself on the measures and candidates had it not been that I got sick about a week before the election. It gave me a chance to take a break from work and school and sit down with a warm blanket and a cup of tea and read the voter's pamphlet. Young people are not used to registering to vote. It's not on our radar. We want to vote, but the crucial step of registering to vote often gets overlooked. I have a coworker who moved to Oregon in the middle of October last year. She's politically active and very much concerned about issues that affect her, higher ed funding, health care, gay rights. She wanted to be able to vote, but in the shuffle of moving, she forgot about registering. Had I not reminded her and brought her a reg card just a few days before the deadline, she would have missed out and her vote would not have been heard. By having same-day registration in Oregon, we can bring more people, and especially youth and other historically disenfranchised demographics, to the table. This would result in elections that better represent the wants and needs of Oregon citizens. The 7 states that currently have same-day registration boast voter turnout rates almost 15% higher than the national average. By having same-day registration in Oregon, we have a chance to strengthen the health of our local and national democracy. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Okay, please go ahead.
Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee, my name is Norman Turrell. I'm here today representing the League of Women Voters of Oregon. I am the first vice president and action chair for the League. League of Women Voters of Oregon is a grassroots, nonpartisan political organization that encourages informed citizen participation in government. The League strongly believes in democratic government depends on the informed and active participation of its citizens and requires that government bodies protect the citizens' right to know by giving adequate notice of proposed actions. The League also believes that a citizen's right to vote must be protected and supports a registration cutoff requirement that does not disenfranchise otherwise qualified voters. Election Day registration was in place until 1986, and I have this date by a very good authority, one of our lifetime League members, Cappy Eden, who also signed this testimony today. has been in the league, I think, 50 years. So she remembers this date apparently pretty well and helped me write this testimony. The league feels that the 20-day cutoff enacted at the time does not treat voters equally, and we have supported efforts to revise the cutoff in several legislative sessions. Already under federal law, if a voter is not registered to vote prior to the cutoff, but otherwise meets all the qualifications, then the voter must be allowed to vote for president on election day. He can get a, the voter can get a special presidential only ballot, as I understand it. The league continues to believe that the 20-day cutoff for voter registration is unfair and disenfranchises some citizens. HGR 43 provides a protection for voters' rights, and we ask your support for it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, please proceed.
Hi, members of the committee. My name is Jefferson Smith. I am with the Bus Project. This is only the second time since I was in the seventh grade that I testified in the building. The chairs seem much bigger then. According to Building Votes Research in Oregon, oh, chairs. Brian Roosevelt. Perfect size.
Oh, I see why he hasn't been invited.
According to the Building Votes Research and Circle, Oregon is tied for the biggest gap between young voter participation and older voter participation in the nation. Let me say that again. According to the Building Votes Research and that of Circle, Oregon is tied for the biggest gap between young voter participation and older voter participation in the nation. This is clearly a problem. And speculation is that we owe much of this to vote by mail. Although I am and we are supporters of vote by mail, I think that it increases voter participation generally, it does not do so in significant, to a significant degree among young people. Young people are highly mobile and they don't have stamps. You know, there was a credit study that asked why, studied why young people have bad credit, and one of the reasons was they didn't have stamps and they didn't mail their bills in. A lousy excuse, but if we want voter participation, we should address realities. If our gap reached merely the national average, the difference between older voter participation and younger voter participation, we would engage 15,000 more young citizens in our democracy ballpark. Why should we care about the participation of young people? At least two reasons. If we rely on elections as snapshots to reflect our best conception of the common good, it behooves us to get something closer to a cross-section of our people to get that snapshot. Second, we also know that voting habits are developed in our early years. Young people who vote as young people are more likely to be engaged citizens when they get older. You and others are also doing studies now to correlate voter participation with reduced criminal behavior over time and almost every other indicator of good citizenship. And almost every correlate demonstrates the more you participate in democracy, the more engaged you are in society in positive ways. And they haven't yet concluded causation, but the correlation is pretty clear. I would therefore thank Chair Rosenbaum and the committee for their leadership on this issue. I would urge the legislature not to conclude business without making at least some meaningful step toward increasing access to democracy. There are a number of things that we can do. We can use postage-paid envelopes. Everybody I know across the nation just assumes that we do, that we don't have a 39-cent poll tax for our voting, which we have. We could allow earlier pre-registration for young people. The single biggest thing, according to Pew, that we can do is reduce the gap between the voter registration deadline and voting day. I want to address one red herring. This is the Rajneesh thing. And I think it can only be described as a red herring in this context for at least four reasons. First is the timeline. We actually didn't enact our 21-day voter deadline, and we should do the perfect research on this, which I have not done, but my decent understanding is that we didn't enact it in reaction to that. We merely changed it to the day before registration. That's what we did. Rajneesh thing, I think, happened 84, 85. We did the one day, 85, 86. It wasn't until, I believe, we heard roughly 1999 that we changed to a 21-day limit. I recognize that there are those who would like to limit access to democracy, those who count votes and recognize that their votes go up in terms of percentage if fewer people participate. But I hope that we are not they. Second, the majority during the Rajneesh affair did not register same day. Third, the current deadline wouldn't stop that behavior even now. As long as they're moving from Oregon, anybody could try to pack a district as long as they're willing to either do so legally or do willingly risk criminal penalties.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
We're getting a little bit of overload on the mic.
Can you just pull back
on the mic just back a little bit?
Sure, sure.
Sorry about that. It's very powerful.
I can raise my voice.
No, please don't.
And finally, and perhaps most compellingly, our statewide voter file now would prevent or at least address situations like that far better than any deadline we could create. The last thing I want to talk about is Oregon, a little bigger picture, and thinking of our state as a place that can incubate forward-thinking political ideas, as a place that can be a birthplace of making democracy work better. We did that with vote by mail. We've done it at multiple historical intervals prior to that, and hopefully we will do it many more times afterwards. The bottle bill, which Representative Berger has shown significant leadership on in this session. Right now, there is growing interest in vote by mail in other states. However, if we are selling this small d democratic product as hassle-free voting, and if, in fact, it yields the biggest gap between older voter participation and younger voter participation, I fear we are not selling as good a product as we ought. And it is incumbent upon us, not only as Oregonians, but as members of, you know, citizens of the country, to build a voter access model that builds a cross-section, that creates a cross-section of voter participation that closer, more closely represents the common good. And anyway, therefore, I appreciate again your leadership on the issue, and I'm done. Thanks very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Yes, Representative Roblin.
I think I'd be remiss in not asking a question of Jefferson, since he's only testified a couple times and given the time for that.
Well, I'm in seventh grade, he didn't ask me questions.
I'm new experience. So the big question is, you know, as a parent, one of the issues that you have with your children sometimes is procrastination. And so I guess what I'm asking is, you know, by changing it, are we actually encouraging procrastination with regard to getting
it's a good question. I would love to ask a poll question. What percentage of young people know what the voter registration deadline is? And we could all make our guesses, right? But the biggest impact that any of us have on getting a young person to vote is telling them to vote. It's not when the deadline is, because there's no teacher asking for their papers. Right? Each of us as citizens are the teacher asking them for their papers. And how do we do that? We do it in voter registration drives. We do it in community organizations. We do it as candidates and as members of campaigns. And I think that would happen in the same course it has now, but you'd have a larger window. I think some of the most important testimonies, when the young man who I know very well, who registered so many voters in the last election, said, you know, it's really those last 6 weeks when people are paying attention. And only half that time is relevant for actual voter registration. That if you doubled that amount of time, you'd have significant more participation. That's first thought. Second thought, maybe. It might encourage a little little procrastination. That would be one fear I'd have. I know that in Minnesota, 75% of students who register to vote do so on the same day. I also know, however, that and maybe some of them have procrastinated because they know they can't. On the other hand, I also know that Minnesota has the highest voter participation in the country. And if I could choose, you know, cost-benefit, it's not, I think, a very hard choice. And finally, I do think that there will be a lot of work to be done to make sure that the system we developed is really, really good. I think we should work with the clerks. I think we should work with the Secretary of State's office. Anything we send out to the voters is going to be a blunt cudgel in our toolbox for democracy. But I do think that's a good one. But I do think that we should at least remove the constitutional barrier so we can allow the legislative process to work, so we can allow the legislature and allow our bureaus to build a really good, accessible, fraud-proof system.
Thank you.
And as you mentioned, this does require a vote of the people. Do you think that there are people prepared to work on the campaign?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I know that there are some, and some of them are here. And hey, he's going to run it. Yes. But anyway, yes, I think that there are. And I think that, I do think there's going to be a lot of conversation between now and any floor vote, depending on what the committee decides to do. Obviously, there'll be a lot of conversation with what happens in the Senate. Some of that's still to be determined. But I do think that there's growing energy around this issue, and I hope that we can do it now. And if we don't do it now, I think we're going to do it at some point.
Great. Other questions? Representative Thatcher?
Thank you. I love to hear from you. You're quite a talented speaker.
Thanks very much, Representative Thatcher.
I didn't catch the name of the study that you mentioned where the gap was.
The data is from CIRCL, which is CIRCL, and the C, I believe, is civic. Is center.
The voice in your ear there.
There we go.
Can you repeat it, please?
Center for Information.
No, Jefferson could.
Center for Information and Research on Civic Learning and Engagement.
Okay, thank you.
It's a Pew-funded nonpartisan body.
Yeah, follow-up to that. Did you notice when in the study, does it show what participation was before?
I think it was Representative Buckley who pointed out it'd be really hard to know what we would to do a longitudinal study and have that be meaningful and isolate the variables, because we've since 1985, and instituted vote by mail, and so our voting system, since we moved from same-day voter registration, right? The problem in this state is not that we have bad voter participation. We are actually a state that has good voter participation in general.
I guess what my question was,
sure.
With vote by mail, we increase participation.
Among older voters, absolutely.
But did it remain static among younger voters?
Yeah, ballpark.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's an excellent question. I will promise that we will go back and see if we can find the data of voter turnout among young people pre 1985 and pre 1999. I think that's really legitimate. What we do know is I don't want to be repetitive, but if we were the national average, if we were the national average in terms of gap, we'd get 15,000 voters. If we were the national average among young people for same day registration states, I think we'd be significantly more than that, 20,000 plus new voters. And so maybe we wouldn't be the national average. My guess is we would do just as well as other states if we had a comparable system.
Representative Roblin.
The only thing I was going to say there is that you testified that they only changed it to one day before,
right
after that. So there wouldn't have been as significant a difference necessarily back in 85.
Right.
If it was 99 that it actually changed, we already did have
vote by mail.
So that would be maybe a time to check and see if there was a difference.
I think this is a really good. We talked to Governor Barbara Roberts, the Secretary of State, a while back, and she was actually the one. Everybody's been talking about how it was the Rajneesh thing that made us move to the 21-day thing, and she said, "Jeff, I don't think so." And when we actually asked a clerk, they weren't sure about the cause and effect, and that's a piece of homework that we probably should have done before this morning, and will do after this morning.
Vice Chair Berger.
Yeah, Madam Chair, before this last comment, I was going to ask that staff actually provide us with a timeline of this and when was it voted on? I hope I'm not asking Madam Chair for a whole lot of research, but there's confusion about these dates and what happened when, and I really would think staff could clear that up for us. Appreciate it.
Great. I'm sure we will find that done competently and expeditiously. Okay, well, thank you very much, all of you, for your testimony. And next, we'll call Andy Miller, Laura Etherton, and David Buchanan. Good morning, and welcome to the Elections Committee.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee. My name is Laura Etherton. I'm the consumer advocate for Oregon State Public Interest Research Group, or OSPIRG. OSPIRG is a statewide, nonprofit, nonpartisan public interest organization. I'll keep my comments brief, wanting to just echo a couple of statements that have been said already. OSPIRG supports this resolution to amend the Oregon Constitution to allow voters to register to vote up to and including Election Day. Oregon has a strong record when it comes to voting and democracy. We were one of the first states to give women the right to vote, foot-by-mail system, substantially later than that. And we have a robust set of civic organizations and others that do excellent voter registration and turnout for elections. The gap between young people voting and the overall voter turnout is troubling, and we believe that the current registration cutoff date, 3 weeks before Election Day, shuts out too many people from the chance to vote just at the time during the election that they are getting really interested in the issues, and just at the time when they are realizing why it is so important to vote. On Election Day, the bottom line is Oregon citizens should be able to go to the polls and cast their votes. They should not be turned away at the polls when they want to cast their votes if they are eligible and there to participate in democracy. The states that have same-day voter registration have had a successful experience with this, high voter turnout rates, and successful implementation. Oregon's centralized voter registration system should ease implementation. We have the benefit of having computers been invented now, and will benefit from that. Many of the states that have had to implement this and have done so successfully have done so in a much more complex way. The existing system should help to prevent any fraud, which has been stated is quite minimal. And we believe that given Oregon's excellent elections workers at the county and state level, that implementation of this should be feasible and should be held to the highest standards. Just want to, again, thank you for considering this important resolution and urge you to approve this for Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Okay. Please go ahead.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Andy Miller. I'm Senior Policy Analyst for the Oregon Business Association, and I'm sitting in today for Lynn Lundquist, who had another obligation and couldn't be here. If you have worked with me before, you know I'm very much in support of this issue personally, and I was delighted to know that the organization that I work for now is also interested in this issue. And we have some different take on it, agreeing with everything that's been said before. I was thinking this through driving down here today, and all of us in this room and, as we say, in the building are very immersed in the electoral process, and we think the world revolves around it. But if you recall your life before you became part of this, do you remember thinking that the most important thing you had to do today was get up and register to vote? I think one of the things that concerns me is at OBA, we recommended reforms to make people trust the legislature more. And what I see is an unwarranted distrust from the public in general of legislators and lobbyists. I think this would do something. The more we can engage people, the more they're part of the process, the more trust they will have in the process, and the more effective will be our product. And that's all I have to say in addition to other people. Thank you.
Yes. I'm sorry. Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Okay, please go ahead.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is David Buchanan. I'm the State Chair for Oregon Common Cause. In addition to the kind of, as was mentioned earlier, the spotty history on this that we've heard from various people, I also wanted to add a little bit more to the spotty history. Common Cause was engaged in supporting Election Day registration back when it was originally enacted. After it was enacted, there were a number of issues that arose. The county clerks had their complaints about the jamming at the county clerk's desks at on Election Day, with numerous people coming in and wanting to register at the last minute. That created this incentive to then have the legislature propose this compromise of a one-day cutoff to end registration on the Monday prior to the Tuesday. That was a very short-lived experiment because the Rajneesh issue, which was so publicized, kind of swamped everything else, including a lot of the facts about what was going on. When the importation of homeless to Wasco County was kind of the big media circus issue, The then Secretary of State, Norma Paulus, said that we have the laws to be able to handle this situation. We don't need new laws. We just need to carry out the laws that we have. And this, in the testimony from Annette Newingham, when she recited the Wasco County Clerk's recitation of an impression of what had happened then, my recollection is a little bit different. And I wasn't there personally, but heard the reports from the Secretary of State, Paulus, and her staff people, who said that the language on the registration form that says all the information I've supplied here is true and you sign on penalty of a felony fine of potentially jail and fine. And the person I heard relating this was Greg McMurdo, who was Assistant Secretary of State then. And he said that when they had staff people, Secretary of State staff people and county clerk people from other counties coming to help this process, the fact that there was a lawyer sitting next to the Wasco County clerk saying, are you sure that everything that you're asserting on this form is true, that caused a number of those people to withhold and draw back from signing that statement. So the number of people registered was not kind of determined by those who heard a report and went ahead and registered, but those who heard the report that this was subject to criminal sanctions and then declined to want to pursue that kind of a registration. The effect of this was multiplied thousandfold because of the press coverage. The actual legal issue was pretty specific, pretty narrow, and pretty well handled, but the publicity was what caused the public's mind to be changed rather completely. There was after this single day cutoff experiment, there was an effort to put an initiative on the ballot for the 20-day cutoff. That didn't get enough signatures in the era prior to the Rajneeshee. They couldn't get enough signatures to get that on the ballot. After the Rajneeshee issue became, then getting signatures for that same initiative 2 years later became quite easy. It got enough signatures, went on the ballot, and was approved. The following legislative session, after the new cutoff was in effect, had a very interesting hearing in front of the House Elections Committee. One of the authors of the initiative was a member of that committee, and she reported a sad, terrible story that after the election, she had some of her constituents who were just good, salt-of-the-earth people that had been her constituents for quite a long time but had happened to move at the wrong time. They came up to her after the election and said, we tried to vote for you, but we weren't allowed to register. And she said, we didn't intend for you to not be able to register. So then the Elections Committee that session did a yeoman's job and heard from the county clerks, and one of the suggestions was to create a new concept, and that was the update. And that, in the past, up till then, a registration was always a new registration, whatever the reason for the change, whether you moved or changed your name or changed your party or whatever, it was always creating a new registration. But at that point, the concept of updating a current registration was created, and that changed dramatically the number of people who were prevented from being able to register at the last minute. So only those people who had never been registered before were now subject to the cutoff, as we've heard in other testimony. And then in one of the factors that was mentioned by Mr. Smith, talking about the gap in participation, because of our update process, as well as the vote by mail makes it convenient for those registered to vote, but the update process makes it convenient for many people to update their registration up to and including election day. And so all of the changes of address and changes of name and those kinds of changes can be handled under our current system and are. So that relieves a lot of the pressure of the crowding on election day and the scenes that were kind of the cause of objections to election day registration. When we've added vote by mail on top of our registration system, the vote by mail has a sort of an unknown side benefit, and that is that it provides feedback to the county clerk. If a ballot is sent to an address of a registered voter and they're no longer there, and the ballot comes back,
then the county clerk has a reason to update that registration. And then after they say, okay, well, the post office failed to deliver that, and then when the post office returned it, then there was a check, okay, here's a forwarding address. We can now send a first-class letter. The ballots are non-forwardable, so they have to come back to the clerk rather than being forwarded. So that the clerk can now send a first-class letter, which is forwardable, and then the person who has moved has the opportunity to update their registration and get everything settled. And this is an ongoing process that happens many times a year, every time there's a ballot mailed out for even the small local elections. A number of ballots come back, and the county clerk can then go ahead and update the registration addresses. So a good deal of the process is done automatically, and the county clerks have the facilities of being able to use the post office system for the return ballots to be able to find lapsed registrations. So all of these factors now make it far easier to handle the registration crush at the last minute. After the initiative was passed, there was another step that hasn't been...
I'm sorry to interrupt you. We actually have some members who have to leave and want to vote, and we have a work session coming up, so you could just wrap up your testimony.
Sure. The one other aspect that we hadn't heard about was after the initiative was passed, Common Cause and other groups filed a case against it in federal district court, alleging that it was an unconstitutional restriction of voter rights. The law allows for the registration cutoff for reasons of administrative necessity. And because Oregon had already proved that the problem was not administratively necessary to have a cutoff, we made that argument. Unfortunately, the federal court didn't see things our way. We appealed that Oregon, the district decision, to the federal Ninth Circuit in San Francisco, and also it was turned down by a vote of 2-1, and one of the judges kind of laughed and said, you've got it so good in Oregon, quit complaining. And so compared to other states, Oregon had a much better system. Thank you. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you, and we'll bring you back up here. Right now we do have to temporarily close the public hearing on HJR 43, and if you could hang with us. And I will open a work session on House Bill 2084. We heard this bill, members, twice before, but we have an amendment before us. Mr. Stembridge, I'm going to ask you to explain that.
Yes, the bill, House Bill 2084, Chair Rosenbaum, authorizes the Secretary of State to set the election date for the United States presidential primary, not necessarily the third Tuesday in May. Your amendment, the -1 amendment dated March 13th, combines the March 2008 election date, that's a statewide election date, with the presidential primary one time only for February 5th, 2008. We asked for a fiscal statement on that. I have not received that yet. And you also had members who wanted to know what the county clerk's position was on this. We inquired, and we made a copy of the message that I got back from Jan Coleman on that.
Okay, so you have an email from Jan Coleman on behalf of the county clerks. I think that the information, the amendment is partly meant to defray the cost of this by replacing another election, and I think the maximum cost, Jim, you had told me earlier.
Yes, we had information on a previous special election cost of $1.3 million for 4 years ago, and we are estimating that it would be $1.5 million. Brenda Bates is here also from the Secretary of State's office. Maybe they'll comment on that.
Brenda, did you have some information about that?
It's in your packet. Okay, three is back. Sorry.
Members, you should have that amendment in front of you.
Yep.
Go ahead, Brenda.
Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, for the record, again, my name is Brenda Bays, the Deputy Director for the State Elections Division. Director Lindback has submitted a fiscal to the committee regarding this presidential primary. I do want to make a few points regarding the presidential primary.
And before you do that, could I just ask you, does that take into account this amendment that we're looking at today?
Chair Rosenbaum, I do not believe it does.
Okay.
The amount that Director John Limbach had given to them was approximately $2.85 million. And the reason for that cost is that the March election is a local election. Approximately only 10 counties usually have an election, which would mean the state would need to pick up the whole cost of that election for the counties that did not have a March election. So, and with the counties that do have an election, we would share the cost. We would also have to do a state voters pamphlet. There is a cost to that. And because it is a primary election, there are different ballots, the Democratic ballot, Republican ballot, nonpartisan ballot. So, of course, the cost of printing those ballots. So the cost includes ballots, postage, personnel, amortization of voting equipment, and, of course, the voter's pamphlet.
So I guess, though, the question would be, does it somewhat reduce the cost to have adopted this amendment as part of the bill?
Chair Rosenbaum, I just briefly read the amendment while I was sitting there. It appears that the amendment is just, it's taking... There would still be a May primary for all other candidates,
right.
Correct?
That's right.
So we would still have the May primary cost,
mm-hmm.
and it would take the place of the March local,
right?
Which is not statewide. Okay, it's a local elections. So then we would move that to February.
Mm-hmm.
So for counties that had any issues, candidates or measures, we would share the portion of that cost. The state would share that. But for the counties that do not have local candidates or measures on their March election, the state would have to pick up all of the cost of that.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? And, yes, Representative Hunt?
Let me try and ask that same question in a different way because I'm not sure I understand the answer. Your estimate, the $2.8 million, was assuming a February election where we would cover the entire cost. If, in fact, we moved the March local measures into February, then that would reduce the $2.85 million, correct?
Chair Rosenbaum, Representative Hunt, that is taking in consideration of us sharing portions with the county.
Follow-up.
So I thought you said initially that your fiscal did not take the amendment into account because the original bill had a February primary election that didn't change March at all. But now you're saying the fiscal does take the amendment into effect.
Chair Rosenbaum, Representative Hunt, the March election is always a local election. So it wouldn't matter if we changed it to February and didn't have it in March or we added on to the March. The result would be the same because we don't have a state election in March.
But it would certainly defray some of the costs to have an election replacing another election, wouldn't it? Even if it's only defraying the cost to the counties, they wouldn't be having to run two elections.
Chair Rosenbaum, I'd like to have Annette Newingham, the county clerk from Lane County.
If you have some information, please come forward. Identify yourself for the record.
Annette Newingham on behalf of the Association of County Clerks for Lane County. Madam Chair and the committee members, the reason why it would be a very minimal, if any, reduction at all is because in most March elections, oftentimes we have nothing. It's not a election that you have candidates. You might have... Like this last March election, to give you an example, I had the city of Dunes, which was less than 1,000 voters, and I am a county of 200,000 voters. It's such a minimal cost that there's not much of a reduction at all. There could be some counties that could have a measure, but most districts don't put things on March ballots. So it's a pretty – so you're not offsetting anything. I hope that helps.
Okay,
only if you move the May to the February. Would it make a difference?
Well, we're not doing that. So, yes, Vice Chair Berger.
I guess in light of this discussion and without any fiscal other than what was mentioned in the chair, I wonder if you'd entertain deferring this a little longer, Madam Chair. Perhaps not. Maybe this is enough. But I think that this is a significant cost to the state that at least makes me pause here and think about this as an investment. I have been very supportive of this, and particularly in light of these amendments, I guess I'd be a little more comfortable if this fiscal weren't in a note, but in a piece of paper.
In an actual document.
Before I voted. You know,
we can certainly do that if that would make...
And a little better breakdown of why this is what
right.
it is.
Right, because I think we do have a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Right. So we'll take that into consideration. Representative Thatcher?
Yes, I'm looking at Jan Coleman's testimony, her email testimony copy. She mentions on the bottom paragraph that we, I'm assuming she's saying we've already had a scenario where we voted for the president in a different time rather than in May with everybody else, like, you know, representatives and senators. We've moved it to May or March. It was a biennial presidential primary in March. So I guess I don't remember that. And is there any cost or experience you can share with us about how that went?
You enjoy all your life. Come on.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we do have, there was an election where we had just president for a primary. And I'm thinking 96. And we certainly would have the cost because we're required, all counties are required to submit that cost to the state. That was prior, well, we did it by mail. And did we do it by mail? No, we did polls. I see, I'm sorry, but I've been, when you've done a lot of elections, on the top of your head is not where you want to go to try to remember dates, apparently. I've been doing this since 1990, and a lot of this stuff starts to blur. But I know that Brenda and the Secretary of State's office could get you specifics to that.
Well, I guess what I was asking, to follow up, she said that we've already done the scenario when we had a biennial presidential primary in March. We no longer have this for a very good reason. It was not successful, and I'm wondering if you could maybe elaborate.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm not exactly sure what Jan Coleman meant by that it wasn't successful. I guess it's probably all relative whether you're talking about participation, and that's apparently maybe what it was, but I know that history also is in the Secretary of State's office. I think it's all relative to the election itself and how involved people are. And some elections are not as haven't as much of a turnout because there isn't a race going on, and that's going to promote lower turnout. So it really depends.
I guess I have one more question as a follow-up. And there's concern that it would dilute the May primaries because you wouldn't have the draw of the president to elect in the May primary, and I'm just wondering if that was also a factor, if you could recall.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that is always a possibility because it depends on where the contests are. If the contest is just the president, then it's going to have an impact on the other things. But if there's still contests and measures that motivate and capture the citizens, there you're going to have good turnout at that one as well.
Well, I would ask you then, though, if so many other states are now moving to a February election date, that basically a contest that will already have been decided long before the May primary, I don't really see that there's much to be gained by continuing to go with that later date, nor do I see that it would really attract a huge amount of interest, because by then, with all these other states, people will feel like it's over.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm not saying whether you move the presidential to earlier or later being the issue. It's just what else is on the ballot. I don't know if the other states that have moved it have moved their entire primary or just the presidential. So I think that's somewhat new, too.
Vice Chair Berger?
Madam Chair, in the interest of time, I would like to move the dash one amendments and defer, if with your permission, or suggest to you defer voting on the full measure until we have some more information, a better vetting of the costs, and I would also request that staff look into where the other states are on this in terms of what states have gone to the fifth and what their, whether it's just a presidential or whatever. I still stand very supportive of this concept, make no mistake, because for once in my life I'd like to vote on a presidential primary that really truly matters, but I think that in light of the cost to the state, I think we need to have more sort of better information to convince maybe some of our colleagues that this is a good idea. So with that, I would move the dash one amendments.
Representative Berger has moved the dash one amendments to House Bill 2084. Is there discussion? Okay. Yes, Representative Esquivel.
I agree with my colleague from Salem. I think the most frustrating thing that ever happened to me was when I was able to vote after I'd turned 21, and that was in the days before they would allow us to would put the results out before, you know, according to the East Coast and, you know, the different time zones. And by the time I got off work and got ready to vote, Richard Nixon was the winner. And that seems like that's what we do every time we vote in the state of Oregon in a primary. We've already have the winner picked out. So I'm very supportive of this.
Thank you for the comment. Will the clerk please call the roll on the amendment?
Representative Thatcher?
Aye.
Representative Berger?
Aye.
Representative Buckley?
Aye.
Representative
Hunt? Excused.
Representative
Rosenbaum? Aye. Okay, the amendment is adopted, and members, we will take this up another day. I know that we did have, I will close the work session on House Bill 2084, reopen the public hearing on HJR 43. I apologize to the previous panel. If you want to come forward again, I know that one of you at least had an additional comment. Thank you for being so patient.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum. For the record, my name is Andy Miller. I'm Senior Policy Analyst at the Oregon Business Association. This may have been brought up in the discussion. There was so much going on, and I was trying not to duplicate other information. But one of the concerns that I think some people may have is that same-day registration or election-day registration leads to partisan advantage. And the research that I was doing in preparation for this hearing, which is from a website called Demos, D-E-M-O-S, said that's a myth, that the reality is EDR will help voters, not parties. This research was done before Montana had same-day registration, but it's a common misconception that EDR will disproportionately advantage the Democratic Party. Party control in the six EDR states is split between the Republicans and the Democrats. And I thought that was important information to have on the record.
Thank you. Thank you for that clarification.
Well, the heck with this, then.
Okay. I don't see any other questions. Thank you very much. That completes our sign-up list. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on HJR 43? Please come forward. Good morning.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mark Luca, and I'm a chair of the Oregon Young Republicans. I've heard a number of comments today about this bill, and first I want to say I appreciate the members of the so-called 5 under 35 and the priority they've put on this. I've been impressed with the caliber of these members, and I believe they are having a beneficial impact on young voters' participation regardless of party affiliation. Our organization does do voter registration, but we are opposed to HJR 43 because we believe in personal responsibility. We've heard of the busy lives that young people, particularly college students, lead, and I think they pale in comparison to my life now after college. I don't know about you, but I kind of long for the days before mortgages and businesses and two jobs and marriages and that sort of thing, and college seems pretty easy by comparison right now. What young people need more than anything, though, is to be held accountable for deadlines and to learn to be personally responsible for their actions. And I fear that this bill might undermine that process. In addition, voting is a right that should not be taken lightly, and this bill allows people to treat it as something that can be done easily and perhaps even flippantly without study and contemplation. In other words, in our view, this cheapens the value of voting. The Secretary of State has come to this committee in sessions past to talk about how the vote-by-mail system is the safest system because it allows a period to check each ballot against a registration card with the person's signature and information on it. And they've come in and said that is in contrast to the system that we used to have where somebody could just walk into the polling place and sign the book and that there wasn't that previous signature on file and it wasn't the same level of security. I fear that same-day registration could undermine the security of that system. We should encourage people to vote, but we should also encourage them to be informed voters. If a person misses the multicolored campaign signs and campaign commercials and campaign ads and campaign mailers and campaign flyers and campaign posters and town hall meetings and doesn't know that an election is coming up, I wonder if that person is really going to be the type of person that's going to take time to study their voter's pamphlet and study all the issues. Oregon has increasing numbers of ballot measures also, which is another factor. We allow the citizens to take on the role of members of the legislature in an essence and pass laws directly. These are often complex bodies of law with far-reaching consequences, and you have the benefit of these hearings and staff and that sort of thing to make decisions based on these complex bodies of law. But a person who just walks in and registers to vote on election day, how likely is it that that person has studied the issues like a Measure 8 or like a Measure 37 that have far-reaching consequences? Is it more likely that they've just rather been forming their opinion based on political advertising or somebody that knocked on their door and said you should go vote on this issue? Well, the concept sounds good, but it has far-reaching consequences they may not understand. How likely is it that the person has been encouraged to vote on this by a person acting as a lobbyist, in a sense, for the measure or candidate? Has the person been given all the information? Did they receive a voter's pamphlet? And were they able to study those issues? Unlikely. We want increased participation, but is, quote, turnout the highest goal of our election system? Finally, I just say please don't vote to encourage the growth of an uninformed electorate, and please don't vote against personal accountability and responsibility at the time that young people need it most. Please don't insulate people from the consequences of their actions. And I urge you to vote no on same-day registration and HJR 43. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Vice Chair Buckley.
Just a quick comment and a question. I'm glad to hear the mention of the 5 under 35. I don't know if you saw that press release from our colleagues. And something maybe our colleagues on this committee, we might do the 4, maybe 40. You know.
Let's not talk about those on the other end of the spectrum. Thank you.
Maybe 40. Maybe 40. So the question I'd have is I guess there's two questions. One, do you have any concern with the gap that was mentioned in terms of youth participation and senior participation? Any ideas on how to address that? And secondly, to respond to, I get calls on the day before election from people of all ages and some who are very senior voters who are asking about their ballot initiatives, very responsible people who simply can't figure it out. So I do think that's a little bit of an issue for people of all ages. But do you have any ideas about bridging that gap?
Certainly. Chair Rosenbaum and Vice Chair Buckley, thanks for the questions. As far as the gap is concerned, I think it is an issue that needs to be addressed. I don't know that it's anything other than a natural phenomenon. You know, I think people, as issues come up that affect people more often, it tends to be later in life because you have more irons in the fire, in a sense, the older you get. So I don't know if the gap is anything other than just a natural phenomenon, and we should work through, like what the bus project's doing, like what our organization is doing, just going out there and trying to get people interested and motivated to take a part in their government. And, as you know, whether or not we can ever fully bridge that gap, statistically speaking, around the country, probably not. It's probably just a natural phenomenon. And part of that is that personal responsibility that I brought up earlier, is that maybe we're more focused on other things at that time of our lives. As far as the calls that you get, I think it does reflect voters' frustration with not being able to fully understand some of these things. And it may be just a one of, again, part of a natural part of having direct democracy issues on the ballot. I think overall it's a good thing, but yeah, there's some limitations to it. So the way that we address it, I think, is just more information. I think HJR 43 is going to limit the amount of time that people have, and you probably would see increased calls if somebody registers to vote the day before the election and then suddenly says, well, I don't know, I have this flyer and this 3x5 card that was left on my, what do you think, you know? And so I think we just ask people we trust and do the best we can.
I usually just give them Representative Esquivel's number.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony.
You.
We will close the public hearing. And actually, this has been excellent. Thanks to everyone who testified. We'll close the public hearing on HJR 43. And with nothing further to come before us, we are adjourned.